It's that time of the week again for another football podcast here on The Racing Post. Thanks so much for taking the time to tune in. It's myself, Jack Reeve, and I'm delighted to be able to welcome The Racing Post's finest football tipsters in Mark Langdon and Dan Childs, and from our sponsors, Paddy Power, making his debut, it's William Fenwick. A packed show today as we preview 10 televised Premier League games and also pick our best bets from the other divisions. Gents, we usually have a little talking point at the top of the show, but I think we'll skip that this week, because as I say, we've got an action-packed show, 10 Premier League games, all on the television, and I'm sure everyone listening wants to hear what your thoughts on them are. Will, let's throw you in the deep end. Let's come to you first of all. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you along. Let's have a look at the 12:30 kickoff on Saturday between Brighton and Manchester United. This one's on BT Sport. Let's get Paddy's powers, prices, and also your prediction for this one.
Hiya, Jack. Great to be on. So we've got Brighton at 7-2, the draw at 13-5, and United at 8-11. Now I'm looking at this match and see Bissouma obviously got sent off very late in the last match, and a lot goes through him. And as well, Man United, they have been a very strong team over the latter half of the last season, especially after lockdown. Even though they had some easy games towards the end, I do think their last performance has gone against them a bit too much in the ratings, and I think 8-11 is definitely your best bet out there for the match odds. But also, if you want something else, in the last 19 Premier League games since the restart, there's been 13 pens. And I know it's been said a thousand times already about Manchester United and penalties, but they just win so many. I do expect them to have a good chance of winning another one. You can back Man United to score a penalty at 7-2 with Paddy Power. And given that they received 14 pens in the league last year, and in 7 of the last 8 competitive fixtures, they've won a penalty. I think that's a bet you got to take.
Yeah, it sounds like a good angle, that one. Mark, I mean, Manchester United, Bruce was presenting last week, and I think he's taken an indefinite holiday after Palace's win against United. I watched their game against Luton Town in the week, and they were not convincing, but got the job done. How do you see this one going?
United won this game very comfortably last season, didn't they? That was a game that they just blitzed early on. Brighton didn't get near them. But I don't know. I wouldn't be in a rush to back United at 8-11. I take on board what Will said, and I think there has been a lot of negativity around the team after what happened against Palace. But they did look a bit off the pace, and do wonder if it's going to take them a couple of games to get where they need to. They, of course, went very deep in the Europa League, and whether that has left its mark, not sure. I mean, and this could be a tricky game. Brighton, if you have a look at the performance against Chelsea, thought they were probably a little bit unlucky to lose that game, then very comfortable winners away to Newcastle. So not a great betting heap for me, but if I were to have a bet on the game, I think it would probably be Brighton or draw double chance.
Yeah, and Dan, I mean, Brighton going into this game, their fans will probably be slightly optimistic, won't they? I mean, last season felt like somewhat of a transitional period for them, and I guess this season is the one that they really try and kick on.
Absolutely. Second season under Graham Potter, you got to remember he was changing the whole style of play to the previous manager, Chris Hughton. I mean, points-wise, they didn't really do I don't think, any better, but there does seem to be a year in that the players are more used to that style, and they have started impressively. I'm going to join Mark and go with Brighton or draw a double chance here. I thought there were so many positives. Firstly, in the Chelsea game, where they actually caused Chelsea a lot of problems, and then against Newcastle, I thought the wing-back, Tarik Lamptey, looks like he could be one of the signings of the summer. He was outstanding against Newcastle, not just his pace, but his decision-making when he got in the right positions. They're carrying a real threat up front. I think, finally, the centre-forward, it looks like he's taken his game on now and looks a little bit more, ready for the level. Neil Mopay got a couple of goals. He's going to be full of confidence. And United, I totally agree with Mark that they don't look right at the moment. They're lacking match fitness. Even when you could say the second string, when they made a lot of changes at Luton, I watched that game and it was 1-0 until very late on. And Henderson had to make a really good save. I think it was Tom Lockyer, Luton centre back, and then the rebound by, I think, cleared off the line. So, I mean, that could easily have gone to penalties that match. And Luton have made 9 changes for that game as well. So, to me, the first string of United and the second string, there's a lack of match fitness there, and I'll be opposing them in this game.
Yeah, it sounds like a tough betting heat, that one, to start things off. But Mark and Dan in agreement. Let's see if this one is any easier to pick apart. It's Crystal Palace against Everton. Will, two teams that have won their opening two fixtures. The dream start, really, for both of these sides. And how did Paddy Power see this one going?
So we have Palace at 13-5, the draw at 23-10, and Everton at evens. Now, as we said, like Palace, they got off to a good start, and especially against United. And Everton in the last match won 5-2, but a lot of that was against 10 men, and it was against West Brom, who are the second worst team in the league. Now, they do have the quality there, especially with the signings that they've brought in. Like, that's fantastic to see. But it will be a bit harder away at Palace, but even so, at evens, I do fancy them there. But the best angle that I see from a betting perspective is looking at Zaha. Now, I'm not just saying this because he scored a few, but he's getting a lot more space with Eze and Batshuayi, and are you all making that space for him? And the big screen is if Milivojevic doesn't start again, he's been benched for the first two games, then Zaha will be taking penalties. At the minute, we're top price 9-1. And if Milivojevic gets benched again, he'll be in a race between our trader to get on that at 9-1 before we cut it, because he'll be on penalties and a lot more likely to score.
Yeah, another nice angle there, Will. Mark, Everton have made a strong start, as have Palace. Will you be getting on board Everton here at even money?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I was very positive in last week's show about Everton, and you know, suggested maybe like you know, it could be the right opportunity to back them to win a cup this season. Around about evens at Palace, though, it doesn't strike me as an amazing bet given the way that Palace have also started, you know, just as well. Yeah, you beat a tricky Southampton team 1-0 and probably controlled large parts of that game, and then absolutely deserved to beat Manchester United. And we always focus on the negatives when a sort of, you know, heavy favourite loses, rather than the positives of the underdog. And Palace, you know, all facets of their game really look pretty good. So two teams that arrive in good nick, had good results. I thought the draw was the one to be on here. Just think with Everton, agree with Will that, you know, a lot of their best work against West Brom was done when they were down to 10 men, the Baggies, and maybe wasn't a great first half performance from them. And I still think you will get that in a new team, that sort of inconsistency. So away from home at evens, I can definitely leave them alone.
Dan, it feels as if punters are always slightly wary of backing the draw, but I agree with Mark here. This seems a tight affair to me. Do you agree?
I'm going to just go with Everton here. I'm aware that it's early in the season and you can get sort of sucked in by sort of one match, two match form, but I've been so impressed with them, not just even the first-choice players. There just seems a complete culture shift there under Ancelotti. I watched their two cup games as well. And against Fleetwood, there's just a hunger and a desire being shown by all the players and the people that have coming in with given a chance, like Anthony Gordon, the young midfield player, and Kunku, I think I got his name right, it looked really, really impressive to me. Bernard was, you know, superb as well against Fleetwood. And there's players there really pushing the guys that have got the jerseys as well. And I think that the midfield, first choice midfield, is so much improved last season. That means there's more chances now being created for the front two. Richarlison's got his two goals against Fleetwood. He's going to be confident. Calvert-Lewin is just improving all the time. And I'm starting to think if United have a bit of an off-season, that Everton could be a side that could even, you know, maybe apply some pressure and push for that top four. So if I'm starting to think like that, I can cope with Everton at evens at Palace.
Brilliant. No, that's a bold call, but I can certainly see where you're coming from there. So that's the 12:30 and the 3 o'clock games ticked off. Let's move on to the 5:30 game. It is relentless this weekend, and it probably will be for the rest of the season with the games being staggered across different times so they can be televised. Will, it's West Brom against Chelsea. This one's on Sky Sports. And I know it's quite kind of boring and predictable of me to say here, but West Brom, they've really got a challenge on their hands this season, haven't they? And what are the prices for this game?
They have, and West Brom are 7-1 to win it. It's 7-2 for the draw and 3-1 for Chelsea to win it. Now,
what's your tip for this one?
Out of them, I do fancy West Brom a little bit. I think maybe the two other promoted teams haven't been rated as highly as they should have because they did play some fantastic football in the Premiership. But I think this is a time when Chelsea, this is definitely the time to play Chelsea for sure because they've just signed Edouard Mendy today and that could be the signing of the season. He's a great keeper. But it'll be a fantastic season because of how bad of a keeper Kepa has been. As a bookie, when I'm pricing leagues and football matches, one of the ways we measure players is by how much of a goal they can contribute or they can prevent or score. With keepers, that can be measured quite easily now with one of the stats that StatsBomb are offering, and you can find for free on fbref.com. If you look at, and this is a mouthful here, but a post shot expected goals minus goals allowed, it gives you an idea of the strength of a shot that a keeper has faced, looking at where the attacker has put it and where it's crossed the line and through the goal and whatnot, and comparing that to how many goals the keeper has saved or let in. And you can average that over 90 minutes, and you can say that looking at last season, Kepa was conceding nearly a quarter of a goal per 90 more than he should have been. And this season, he's not got off to a good start. He's made some mistakes already. After two games, he's conceding half a goal more than he should be. That's just compared to an average keeper. Now, Mendy is a very good keeper, so he's contributing 0.11 of a goal, saving more shots, more goals than he should be. So once he gets in, he's going to improve that Chelsea team massively. That's a huge improvement from last season. So, yeah, I'd say now is the time to be playing Chelsea and now is the time to be beating them.
Yeah, Mark, I mean, West Brom at 7-1, that's a massive price for a home side. But even so, they haven't really set the world alight with their opening two fixtures, have they?
No, they haven't. I thought they improved against Everton compared to, even though the final score was heavily against them, I thought it was an improved performance, really. First half, they were unfortunate. On half time, wasn't it, conceded the second goal and, you know, Gibbs's red card and stuff like that. And it just changed the complexion of the game. But if you have a look at the two goals they scored, I mean, they were two outstanding finishes, you know. And when I'm looking at them and just thinking, well, who's going to score kind of the normal goals, the tapping goals or whatever, I don't see anybody being able to do that. And you can't, even if Kepa stays in goal, you can't keep smashing them in from 20, 25 yards. But agree that Chelsea are probably not at their free-flowing best at the moment, and they'll get better as all the players sort of come in and become adjusted. But I still think Chelsea to win and over 2.5 goals is the way to go in this game. West Brom's defence, even allowing for the fact they were down to 10, hasn't been very good. You know, Leicester won comfortably, then Everton did. And if you look at sort of Chelsea last season, all bar one of their away wins finished with at least 3 goals. The one that didn't was the 2-0 success at Tottenham. And of course, they've already started this season with a wide margin sort of victory in terms of goals in that game against Brighton when they eventually won 3-1. Kai Havertz got the hat-trick, didn't he, against Barnsley. So I think there's enough there to suggest that Chelsea will win the game. I just don't trust them, even against West Brom defensively, to keep a clean sheet.
Dan, you obviously watch a lot of EFL football and West Brom gained promotion from the Championship last season. What did you take from them performances? Obviously, a really, you know, successful campaign. And can they take that success and start to put some results and performances together in the Premier League? And what do they need to do that?
Well, I think they can to an extent. I mean, there were question marks over certain players, whether they could hack it in the Premier League. And probably two of their best players from last season who were only on loan, Grady Diangana and Matias Pereira. I mean, Mark mentioned the two great strikes against Everton. I mean, they were absolutely quality goals. And there's evidence there that those two are going to make an impact in the Premier League. And if you can then add a centre-forward to it, they've been searching for a centre-forward all summer. If they can get that signing right, you can start to think, you know, maybe they're going to score some goals. But the other issue is they're conceding too many. I mean, they've already shipped 8 goals in 2 games. And unless they tighten up more at the back, you know, you can only see them going to finish in the bottom three. I'm going to go on a similar sort of track to Mark here. I'm going to go Chelsea to win and both teams to score. I just think Chelsea against that West Brom defence, you've got Havertz now has got his confidence with his hat-trick in the week. Timo Werner is likely to get better game by game. But I do think, I agree with Mark, they may concede a goal. They gave up in the Barnsley game, the 6-0, actually gave up 14 shots, Chelsea, in that game. And Caballero had to make a couple of smart saves. And against Brighton, they gave up quite a few decent chances to Brighton in that 3-1 win. So I'm going to go Chelsea to win and both teams to score.
Wonderful stuff, Dan. OK, let's move on to the evening kickoff on Saturday, which sees Burnley take on Southampton. This game is live on Sky Sports. And Will, how will Paddy Power seeing this one shape up?
We have Burnley at 21-10, the draw at 9-4, and Southampton at 13-10. Out of those two prices, I think that they're quite accurate. But given that Southampton have had a whole week's rest and that extra time to prepare, I think the 13-10 would be the price I'd go for. I think it's quite underrated how much a week's rest can be worth compared to having to play a midweek fixture, not just due to fatigue, but also to all that extra time on the training ground Southampton have preparing just to play Burnley. Also looking in the betting, I'm quite interested back in Che Adams in the goal scoring markets. He's been very dangerous since lockdown. I think probably Southampton's most dangerous player, and he's been getting himself some fantastic shooting opportunities since the start of the season as well. His XG is 1.7 over those two matches, which is huge. And then he was averaging 0.62 per 90 XG since the end of lockdown to the end of last season. Given that did include a lot of sub minutes, and it's a lot easier to get those chances when you're a sub, but I think he's a real danger. And if he keeps up the form he's been in, he'll find himself the top Southampton goal scorer by the end of the season. So backing him anytime goal scorer at 9-4, I think it's a real good shout.
I know our listeners enjoy a goal scoring angle, Will, so they'll enjoy that nugget of information. Mark, Southampton, many punters were quite sweet on them going into the season, but what have we made of their start?
Well, the game against Crystal Palace, the defeat doesn't look quite so bad now, does it? Palace have gone, you know, in horse racing terms, frank the form by going to Old Trafford and winning. And Southampton, then, you know, against Tottenham, if you stop that game after 45 minutes, like you're just going into injury time of that first half, I mean, they were really good. I mean, they completely outplayed Spurs. And even in parts of the second half, they did as well. They were undone by some loose defending, some quality finishing and some unbelievable assisting as well from Harry Kane. Burnley haven't got a Harry Kane, they haven't got a Heung-Min Son. And I think this is a good opportunity for Southampton to get that victory. I'm a little bit worried about confidence because it would have taken a battering. But actually, if you go back to that Leicester humiliation last season, that was kind of the catalyst for them to sort themselves out and start performing better. So I'm hopeful of the same coming true again. And for Burnley, they've got a small squad and the injuries are sort of really stacking up at the moment. So, Tarkowski's been out injured, hasn't he, for a while now. There's a doubt as to whether he comes back. Ben Mee's been out. Rodriguez went off injured in the cup game in midweek. So that their small squad's taking a bit of a hit at the moment.
Dan, can we be slightly more sympathetic towards sides who've maybe had a slower start than they would have liked because of the, you know, the condensed pre-season and just the strange surroundings regarding football at the moment?
You can be, but I mean, some teams, you know, handle it better than others. And you know, to make some money at this stage, it's about finding those teams that have adapted better. But I do think here this could be where Southampton actually get their season up and running. I just think I think they have got to sort out the issue with not getting pressure on the ball and playing such a high line. Good teams, it might not be the last time that a team like Spurs goes and racks up a big score against them. But as Mark's mentioned, Burnley have not got that kind of firepower. They've not got a great deal of pace actually in their attack. But Dwight McNeil on the wing is probably their most exciting attacking player. They've got two strikers out. Rodriguez picked up an injury in the week. Ashley Barnes is still out. They've got the first choice centre backs are both out. They're saying that Ben Mee and James Tarkowski, neither of them apparently are going to make the weekend. So that's a big hole in the spine of your side, if you like. And I just think this is a game where Southampton can take advantage. You've got, you know, Danny Ings has started the season in great form. And I think I would take them to get the win here, even though I think if Burnley were full strength, if you're looking at last season, actually finished above Southampton. In fact, they're a bigger price playing at home, but you have to take into account the injuries. So Southampton for me.
Sunday and Monday's Premier League fixtures still to go through. And of course, the Naps of the Week. Stay with us.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Hello, welcome back to part two of the Football Postcast. Thanks for sticking with us. It's the early kickoff on Sunday at 12 p.m. between Sheffield United and Leeds United. If you want to watch this one, it is live on BT Sport. And Will, what have we made of Leeds' start to the campaign? Because there's certainly been drama in both of their games. And has that affected the price in this fixture?
Yeah, it has. We've got Sheffield United at 13-8, the draw at 9-4, and Leeds at 13-8, so it's a classic pick'em there. And I think that has been influenced by Leeds conceding so many goals and conceding so many penalties. Like this is a Leeds team who kept 22 clean sheets in the Championship last season. And they've come up and they've been scoring and, you know, all guns blazing like people expected to, but they've not had that defensiveness that they had back in the Championship. So I actually have Leeds a little bit shorter, quite a good bit shorter. I think it's just a bit of a pre-season where you start a season jitters and like you cannot really blame them for the chances they conceded to the champions, but they definitely You got to look at the chances they conceded against Fulham, though. Those were conceded when they were already 3 goals up, you know. And it's quite normal for a team to, you know, relax a bit and drop the ball, so to speak. But I think you can kind of discount that and say you saw the real Leeds before that. So I'm very keen at Leeds at 13-8, for sure.
Mark. Yeah, sorry, mate, go on.
I'm sorry, I might even be tempted to back them to win 2-0 and to get that clean sheet.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm not surprised you've gone that way. Mark, what we've heard a lot about Leeds so far. What do we make of Sheffield United? Of course, they've had a real rise through the divisions over the past couple of years. And I'm not saying they may have been sussed out now, but it's going to be a more challenging season for them this time around, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Dan Charles tipped them for relegation on the podcast last week as a team that could really get dragged into trouble. I suppose in terms of this season, quite difficult to judge because they were 2-0 down and the game almost felt over against Wolves, you know, inside like 10 minutes. And then they've had a player sent off in the first half and missed a penalty against Aston Villa. It's sort of like, you know, and then the goalkeeper doesn't cover himself in glory either. It's sort of like the nightmare sort of game, wasn't it, that one for them. I think the goalkeeper's the big issue. The drop-off from Henderson to Ramsdale is significant. And, of course, it cost them, what was it, about $18 million in the process to go down in grade in goalkeeper. So, you know, you're sort of wasting money that probably could have been spent elsewhere. So that, I think, is a big concern for Sheffield United. That said, in this game, I was looking at the unders as the way to go. Now, I know most punters probably wouldn't want to back the unders when Leeds have just been involved in 2-4-3 games. But as Will was saying, last year in the Championship, they were a team that controlled a lot of games. And actually, you know, there weren't that many sort of gung-ho matches. And the Bielsa, I think what's happened is now people have thought to themselves, right, Bielsa, crazy coach, loads of goal-mouth action. I've seen 2-4-3s and this is it. This is how it's going to be for the rest of the season. But in terms of the fact Leeds aren't creating that many chances, despite the fact they've scored 7 goals so far, and they haven't given up outside of penalties, haven't given up that many either. So I thought the unders, particularly with a 12 o'clock kickoff, might just be, and it's a derby game, might just lead to a lot of blood and a lot of thunder, but maybe not too much in the way of goals.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to see how Leeds' season started. As you say there, Mark, last season in the Championship, it did feel all very disciplined and controlled, and it's been slightly chaotic the start. Dan, Mark mentioned there your tip on last week's podcast in terms of Sheffield United. Does that mean you're leaning towards Leeds here?
I'm not. No, I'm going to go with Sheffield United. I mean, I mentioned Sheffield United last week. They're probably in a group of about 8 teams, I would say, that could be involved in the relegation battle, which I expect, you know, to be tight. And they're a big price at the moment. And I would say, included in the 8 teams, I would include Leeds. I don't think they're absolute certainties to avoid a relegation battle. When you actually look at what they've added at the moment, I mean, Rodrigo's had a bit of a slow start. Okay, he might come good. But I look at the rest of the team, you could even argue a case from being weaker. I mean, they've lost Ben White at the back. He was a big, big player on loan from Brighton last season. And the early evidence is suggesting that they're very, very open at the back and they're giving up a lot of chances and conceding a lot of goals. And Bielsa has admitted that they've been very, very clinical with the finishing and he doesn't expect that to carry on. They've scored with, you know, probably, you know, a high percentage at the moment of the chances. Now, if you don't think that's going to carry on, you have to wonder, you know, results, you know, could take a bit of a turn for the worse. Sheffield United, my view of them probably improved a little bit after watching them, funny enough, lose to Aston Villa. I mean, they were very competitive, lost 1-0, and they played the vast majority of that game with 10 men, lost John Egan to a red card, I think, after 12 minutes. So, no, I think that was a better performance from them. And when you think here, you know, they're a team that's had a good season last season. They're against a newly promoted side, conceding a lot of goals, home advantage. I just think they're a little bit of value here, Sheffield United.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. I'm still slightly confused with the Leeds love-in. Slightly more selling needed for me to get on board with Leeds at this point in the season. The next game, Tottenham Hotspur against Newcastle United, 2 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Will, Tottenham, 5 goals for them last time out. Newcastle, admittedly against the Morecambe side, 7 goals last time out. Are there going to be goals in this one?
I'm not one. I don't think it's going to be many goals in this one. I'd have to say the Newcastle result was an absolute fluke against a terrible team. The amount of space they were given for all those goals is just criminal. We've got Spurs at 2-5. We've got the draw at 7-2 and Newcastle at 6-1. And out of those, I fancy Newcastle at 6-1. Like. Son, he scored the same goal 4 times against Southampton there. And it was because they were playing a high line and he was able just to run onto it. And Kane was playing fantastically. Like he's really turned into a little bit more of a playmaker, which I think is great to see because his passing is fantastic and really underrated part of his game. But they won't get that chance against Newcastle low block. So I think it's going to be a very... very boring game, to be honest. I wouldn't be watching this if I had to pick one to watch. As a neutral, but yeah, I go for Newcastle at 6-1 as a picker.
Mark, inject some optimism into me here. It was a wonderful result for your boys last weekend. Can they repeat that here?
The result was a lot better than the performance. I mean, the first half was probably even worse than Everton. So, they struggled against Plovdiv as well. So if you're looking at sort of the 6 halves of football that Tottenham have played so far, they've been really bad in 5 of them. Played well for about 30 minutes at Southampton and probably about 10 minutes in Bulgaria. They've had to go to Macedonia for a game in the Europa League tonight, which doesn't help, I don't think, in terms of preparation. So I don't think it'll be a great game, no. And I think Newcastle will try to keep it tight and frustrate Spurs. And it's just a case of whether Tottenham have got the tools to unlock them. I expect that they eventually will, but I was looking at Tottenham to win and under 3.5 goals as the best bet in this game. Newcastle's performance against Brighton didn't have a meaningful attempt on target in the entire game. Suggest maybe the West Ham, the hope of that West Ham performance was nothing more than a bit of hope. And I don't read anything into the Morecambe game just because it was so easy. And you can't compare Morecambe to Tottenham.
I'm sure we can find a way.
Well, I mean, Eric Dyer might struggle to get in the Morecambe team. He carries on playing the way he is, but the rest of them, not so much.
Dan, I know that the gents are reserved to read anything out of that Newcastle performance against Morecambe, but I was listening to Steve Bruce talk after it, and he was really impressed with their application, just their relentlessness to keep on going. Is that going to give them some hope and optimism against the Spurs side that, will be chuffed in their last result in the Premier League?
Yeah, it will. I mean, it will raise confidence in a couple of the individuals, if nothing else. I mean, Joe Linton scored with a couple of goals, won a really good strike. Almiron as well had a good game. So it doesn't do any harm for some of your forward players to get a bit of confidence. I mean, they're probably more than likely to be on the bench anyway, but you've still got a counter-attacking threat there with Sam Maximin and you've got Callum Wilson's pace now up front. So I do think Newcastle are going to carry a bit more of a threat this season. This is the angle. I'm going to go slightly differently. I'll go Spurs to win and both teams to score because I think Spurs are going to be a lot more of a confidence side after the Southampton game than they were before it. And you've got Lo Celso who come on at half-time. That made a big difference as well. Just gives Tottenham some creativity. I wasn't involved in the goals at Southampton, but against a team like Newcastle that probably will come with more of a counter-attacking strategy, his eye for a pass is going to make, I think, a bit more of a difference. I do expect Spurs to score. If they score first, that could open the game up. But I do think Spurs, as Mark's mentioned, they're not great at the back. Eric Dier's still not convincing as a centre back. Davinson Sanchez, when he plays it, there's often a mistake in him. So I'm going to go Spurs to win and both teams to score.
Will, I know you weren't excited for that fixture. Tell me you're excited for Manchester City against Leicester City. This is the game we're previewing now. And the show of the prices from Paddy Power, please.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. We've got City at 4-1. We've got the draw at 5-1. And we've got Leicester at 8-1. And you can definitely expect more goals in this one. City looked great. Same old City on the return to the Premier League. They're playing again tonight against Bournemouth. And I watched them their price move in on the exchange. It was 1.52. And it's shortened into 1.27 now. And that's just because City can't field a bad team. Like, they've got so much quality and depth. Like, they are fantastic. And that's why they're such a short price for the leagues and the cups compared to Liverpool. Even though when you see the two teams play each other, there's not that much between them. Yeah, I do expect goals. And I'm looking at this draw price and I'm thinking 5-1, like, yeah, there could be plenty of goals, but there could be some from Leicester as well. So 5-1, the draw would be my pick for the match. But I'm going to repeat myself again here on the penalties again, because 13 pens in 19 Premier League matches, and last year Leicester were the second... with a team with the second most penalties in the games in the league, and Manchester City with a team with the fourth most penalties in their games in the league. So once again, I can see a lot of pens being scored, and a pen to be scored at 17-10 looks like a good bit of value to me.
If nothing else from this podcast, we've learned that Will loves a penalty. Mark, what's your prediction for this one?
Probably the predictable one, really, in terms of Manchester City to win and both teams to score. Clicked again against Wolves on Monday. And brilliant, I thought, City in the first half. Some people were looking at Wolves and wondering if they were off it. I just think that City were just so good. The movement of those front players and the way they won the ball back. Like, Wolves just had no answer to it. And Wolves are probably... you know, tactically, you could argue sort of the best team in the league, really, in terms of defensive structure. And they were just pulled apart. And that's the quality of City going forward. And if they've got a vulnerability, it usually comes in difficult away matches. They only won once away to the top seven last season. So already I think you can see the desire of City to make sure that they're champions again, that maybe wasn't there last year, and they did drop that intensity slightly. I also think Ndidi's injury for Leicester is a big old one. You know, he missed seven Premier League games in a row. If you go back to that sort of time, just after the new year and into March, and during that spell, with only one of those seven games, and that was against West Ham, and such an important player for them. One that I think is one of the most important players in the league, really, in terms of the position he does. And so when you're playing against City, to be missing your sort of best defensive midfielder and one of the best defensive midfielders in the league, I think is a big, big problem for that Leicester defence. But even though City were great against Wolves, they've still given up one goal. They probably could have given up a little bit more as well. There were opportunities for Wolves, and they will give you a chance, and they do allow space in behind. And Jamie Vardy absolutely loves running into that space. So I think Man City will win the game, a high-scoring game. If you wanted a correct score, go something like 3-1 might be worth a punt.
Yeah, good stuff, Mark. Dan, Manchester City predictably short at home. How are you trying to find some value here?
I mean, look, every game, look, if you look at a game without prices, I could just say, you know, I'd fancy Manchester City to win. But every outcome is possible. And just the price for the draw, 5-1, just looks a little bit high to me. So I'm going to take a chance on that. I just think, look at Leicester last season. They do play quite well in some of these tough away games. They drew 1-1 at Chelsea last season. They nearly got a draw at Liverpool, injury time penalty sent them to a 2-0 defeat at Liverpool. They took the lead at City last season and they lost the game 3-1. But, they were they did have the wherewithal there with Vardy to go in front. And Didi is a big loss. So that is a concern. Although he has been playing as a sort of a makeshift centre-back, Johnny Evans could be back for this game. And if he plays alongside Soyuncu, at least, the centre of defence will be a bit more solid. City were very impressive, but their form last season, they're not a team suddenly that are coming off of getting high 90s in terms of points. They did drop a lot of points last season, so I'm not prepared to have them at such a short price. So the draw for me.
Good man, Dan. And let's talk about the late kickoff on Sunday, 7 p.m. West Ham United against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Again, this one live on BT Sport. And Will, please give me a show of the prices for this one, please.
So we have West Ham at 11-4, the draw at 23-10, and Wolves at evens. Now, looking at those prices, I think they're pretty much bang on. If I had to pick between the two, though, I'd go for West Ham at 11-4. I have been so impressed with Antonio ever since lockdown. He's been the standout player for me. Since lockdown, he's averaged 0.94 XG per 90, and that's over 11 games, and he's averaging 85 minutes in those games. So it's not like he's coming on and getting a few lucky shots. He's getting played, starting every match and getting time to score these goals. He's scored 9 goals in his last 11, and it's fantastic to see. So I'm quite fancying him at 6-1 for first goal scorer, but I'm also fancying him for top goal scorer as well. Like if he continues getting these sorts of chances and he's got that 0.94 XG, he keeps that up for the remaining 36 games, then he could be in for 32 goals. But that's saying a lot for him to keep up his goal scoring form, to keep getting played. I don't think he's going to get 32 goals, but if he gets 32 games this season for West Ham, I do expect him to be 32 games a striker, that is. I do expect him to be getting 20 plus goals this season. Some bookmakers are offering 150-1 for him to be a top goal scorer at the end of the year, and you get each way on that, which is the real value, I'd say. So that's going to be a tip I'm going to throw out there as well.
I love it. A massive price fancy from Will there.
A massive. I do love a massive price.
be sure to tweet us at Racing Post Sport what you make of that one. Mark, if you were to look at the West Ham United hashtag on Twitter, you would think they're in a really perilous state. What do you make of their chances in this game and also their kind of expectations for the season as well?
I definitely don't follow the West Ham hashtag, Jack. As a Spurs fan, it's not something you want to be reading about 24 hours a day. I can tell you that because most of it's not nice towards Tottenham if they're not slagging off Brady, Gold and Sullivan. So I will avoid that, but I'll take your word for it that the things are not well. Although Colton Cole on his Instagram yesterday referred to me as Lango in a picture. Some of my West Ham mates were absolutely buzzing at that. Yeah, it's high moment of my career.
Call him Coley or something.
We met yesterday, and I think we might be best friends now. It was a meeting of minds, and a great time with him. But no, in terms of, he was actually saying as well that he's been associated with West Ham for 15 years, and they always pull it out of the bag. People moan and moan and moan, the fans, and then all of a sudden they pick up a result out of absolutely nowhere. And they nearly did that, I suppose, against Arsenal. It was a much improved performance against Arsenal, but they did still lose the game. And I initially wanted to get with Wolves in this fixture, but the market has maybe gone a little bit too far because Wolves opened up around about 13-10 and now Will says into even. So I don't think I'll be backing Wolves at evens in this game, hoping that at least confidence is restored from what happened, you know, by playing well against Arsenal. They can then carry that into the next game. And so I was looking at the draw maybe as being the best bet. Wolves have, having had a really settled team for a long time, Wolves are now, you know, they're shifting things around, aren't they? They've sold Doherty. They've also moved on Jota. And they're bringing in Nelson Semedo. They've brought in some more Portuguese sort of young players as well, Fabio Silva being one of those. So interesting times at Wolves. And I'm not saying that they're suddenly going to get a whole lot worse, because their recruitment has been absolutely spot on. So it's just more about just reserving judgment on them and sort of their ability to win this game, I suppose, at evens. I was happy to back them at 13-10. Not so much now that the market has moved.
Well, who would have thought a flourishing friendship would have come between Mark Langdon and Carlton Cole? Brilliant stuff. Dan, what's your thoughts on the final game of Sunday?
I think the market has moved too much, and I'm prepared to actually give West Ham a shot here at winning this game. I think Wolves will have another good season, but you know, coming off of a defeat to Manchester City, you know, it might just knock the confidence a little bit. You've got on the positive side for West Ham, they were so much better against Arsenal than they were against Newcastle. They won the shot count 14-7 against Arsenal. Antonio, who I thought had a pretty ordinary game actually against Newcastle, was back to his sort of buccaneering best against Arsenal. Had a really, really, really decent game. And they've got other players even to come in, you know, from outside of the, you know, maybe off the bench. I thought Yarmolenko in midweek against Hull, you know, was excellent as well. Classy contribution from him. So, I think it'll be a tight game. I don't think with David Moyes that West Ham will play, will open up, certainly when the scores are level. But that, I think, will make life difficult for Wolves to do their counter-attacking that they're very, very good at. So I think it will be close. First goal will be really important. I think West Ham are just a shade overpriced.
Saturday and Sunday's fixtures done. Still Monday to go, and I'm sure Dan Childs will be able to find some angles for some EFL bets later on in part three.
Everything is better when it's bigger. Paddy Power's same game multi allows you to combine a number of selections from a single match into one big bet. Check out the same game multi tab and get building your bet. Terms and conditions apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to part three of the Football Postcast here on The Racing Post. Myself, Jack Reeve, Mark Langdon, Dan Childs and Will Fennett. Great to have you along. Monday's fixtures to take a look through now. And let's start with Fulham versus Aston Villa. This one kicks off at 5:45 on Monday. It's on Sky Sports. And Will, how are the markets seeing this one go?
So we have Fulham at 15-8. We have the draw at 11-5 and Villa at 6-4. Now, Fulham, they played a weak team on Wednesday, and they've got an extra day's rest over Villa coming into this game. And Villa, I thought, could have done a lot better against their 10-man Blades. So even with all the money they spent, that's £73 million, I think it's going to take a little while for them all to bed in, apart from Martinez, who was fantastic on his last match there. I'm definitely fancying Fulham there at 15-8. Like I said, I think some of the teams coming up have been a little bit underrated, and Villa, they just have so much poor football behind them in the last season that it's hard to overlook that.
Yeah, no, definitely, Mark. Would it be harsh to be too down on Fulham at this stage of the season?
I think it's probably more, there's a bit of confirmation bias going on here, really, that, you know, a lot of people would have said, oh, well, Fulham will be relegated. You know, what happened to them last time? They lose two games, they concede 7 goals, and immediately the people who felt that Fulham were going to get relegated just assume that they're therefore right after 180 minutes. It's a natural conclusion to come to. And I think just in life, you've probably got to be aware of confirmation bias, but particularly in betting, it can get you into a whole heap of trouble over the long term if you're completely unaware of confirmation bias. So at least have that in your pocket and sort of acknowledge that it kind of exists in most people's psyche, really. It's just it's just normal. But for this game, I mean, I agree, really. I think I'd rather be with Fulham. I mean, it's been a bad start for them, but basically everything Leeds hit went in last week. And the game before was against Arsenal. They didn't play well, but I think Arsenal, you know, won the FA Cup. They're a top six team. Aston Villa are not a top six team. They only just about survived relegation last season. I think the jury's out as to how much they've improved. That they beat Sheffield United 1-0, but we don't know how good Sheffield United are this season. They had a player sent off really early. I'm not jumping to any kind of conclusions with Aston Villa. I'm putting them down as a wait and see type of team, but I definitely don't want to be backing them as favourites away from home, even against Fulham. So I'd like Fulham draw no bet. It's a tentative one because I think there's, you know, question marks over both teams at the moment, but I find it difficult to back Villa as favourites away from home in a Premier League game.
Dan, are you in agreement with the gents here?
Yeah, full house for Fulham. I'll go for just Fulham to win the match. I just think they're overpriced. I think both teams are in that group of, like I said, about eight teams that are at risk of relegation. But I don't think Fulham are certainties to go down. And if they were going to have any chance of staying up, these are the sort of games they're going to be targeting to get 3 points from. You know, you have got Mitrovic up front, who's, you know, he's proven himself in the Premier League you know, two seasons ago. You know, they've come up, you know, they've played some good football to win promotion. And I think the performance at Leeds, they were unlucky, really, to lose that game away from home there. So Aston Villa, they're spending a lot of money. I look at them on the pitch at the moment and I still don't see, you know, a great improvement in their performances. Against Sheffield United, you're playing against 10 men for all that time. OK, you've won the game. You've got to look at performance. Fulham away, I think he's going to be tougher than playing Sheffield United's 10 men for most of the game. I fancy Fulham to win it.
Well, there we go. I hope we've got some Fulham fans listening, because that was very convincing arguments from all of you there. OK, the final of the 10 live televised fixtures to get onto is Liverpool against Arsenal. This game has been brought forward to 8 o'clock on Monday. It's on Sky Sports. If you're looking to watch it in the pub, you can still do so before you get kicked out at 10 o'clock. Will, how are Paddy Power seeing this one going?
So, of course, you've got Liverpool favourites. We have about 4-9 here, with the draw at 7-2 and Arsenal at 5-1. I wouldn't be Arsenal's biggest fan, even with the massive improvement that they've made recently. It seems like they did struggle against West Ham. They gave away far too many opportunities at the back, and whilst they can score a lot of goals, until they fix that defence, and they're just not going to be able to push on and become the top four team that they have the potential to be. It's never been argued that they don't have that potential, but to actually get the performances out and get the numbers there where you want them to be, like they're still not doing that consistently. So I definitely fancy Liverpool, especially with Thiago coming in. Like he's a fantastic player. I've got him as one of the top 10 players in the world. So to see him go to Liverpool, to see him go from the Champions League Europe to Liverpool, that's some signing.
Yeah, Mark, that signing was impressive. I mean, his performance he put in that second half against Chelsea just so satisfying to watch, wasn't it? He's surely going to have a big impact on the Champions.
He will, yeah. I mean, it was the perfect game. It was absolutely the perfect game for him to come into, of course, because, you know, Chelsea were down to 10 men and they completely surrendered sort of possession territory. So, you know, somebody that is a real pass master, it's just perfect, isn't it? So I've no doubt that he'll be a great player for Liverpool. I wouldn't go overboard about that debut. It was quite an easy start, I think, and probably could have done better with the penalty that was given away. In terms of what he'll bring to the team overall, I think what Liverpool will find, I mean, Liverpool absolute masters on the counter-attack, but they'll find now that teams are just are not going to press them at all, and they're going to sit in and you know, just try and pack out the defence. And quite often when you do that, you know, one of the things you do is to let the defensive midfielder have the ball. And I suppose Fabinho would have been that person, or Jordan Henderson, both decent footballers in their own right. But Thiago can just, you know, find that pass a lot easier and a lot better than what either of them two could. So it definitely going to improve them. Four games, I think, even more so against sort of the kind of bottom half teams, if you like, when they just try to frustrate Liverpool. Interested to see how Arsenal approach the game, you know, because do they sort of adopt those tactics? I'm not sure. I think Arteta's been quite aggressive in every game that they've played so far. More often than not, it has been successful. I was really struggling to find a strong bet in this game. I think the markets have got it sort of wrapped up quite well in terms of the prices. The one that I thought might just have a little bit of value in it potentially was draw half-time, Liverpool full-time. For some of the reasons I mentioned earlier there about how teams are going to try to frustrate Liverpool. And we saw that even Chelsea at home with 10 men, you know, weren't interested really in attacking. It was more about the counter-attack. So Arteta has made Arsenal, I think, more solid, even if they didn't look like that against West Ham. I think overall he's done a good job in that. For 90 minutes, though, I just don't see it, and Liverpool to eventually win in what might not be quite as a high-scoring game as what many people are anticipating.
Yeah, Dan, let's get your say on this final game that we'll be taking an in-depth look at. And yeah, we know Liverpool's talents, but Arsenal can't be overlooked here, can they?
No, I don't think they can be. And I'm going to actually I'm going to challenge that Liverpool price. I'm going to go for Arsenal or draw double chance, which I think is overpriced. A lot of reasons, really. I think Liverpool at the moment are very hard to assess. They were sloppy against Leeds, you know, nicked the result 4-3. They only really come on strong in that game in the last 20 minutes where they pen Leeds in. And the Chelsea game is very hard to assess, as Mark's mentioned, because of the fact that, you know, for they're playing against 10 men for, you know, over half of the match. So I just think you've got to wait a little bit to see if Liverpool are, you know, playing at the top of their game at the moment. We saw them in the Community Shield against Arsenal where there was nothing between the teams, really. And from an Arsenal perspective, that's increasing a body of evidence that they are now more competitive against the big teams. They've to win the FA Cup, they've gone and beaten Manchester City and Chelsea at Wembley. Towards the end of last season, they beat Liverpool at the Emirates. And I wonder now, with Anfield, I think with the lack of the crowd, I think the games they're going to miss it are these big games when they need the crowd behind them. So I wonder if home advantage in these big games is going to be worth as much to Liverpool as it normally would be. So I just think prices are a little bit wrong. So take a chance on Arsenal not to lose the game.
Brilliant. Well, hopefully you're armed with the best knowledge from our expert tipsters ahead of the Premier League action this weekend and into Monday. Dan, I'll stay with you. Let's get all of your fancies from across the other divisions. Been loving the tips in the assist and in Saturday's Racing Post editions. I know you've been very sweet on Cambridge, an ageing but still wonderful Wes Houlihan, sort of getting them boys going. Are you keen on them or any other fancies this weekend?
I think Cambridge will have a really good season. I think the manager, Mark Bonner, has done an excellent job there. They were improving, you know, quite a bit towards the end of last season. I've not included them, though, this week. I've got two fancies in the EFL. I watched Coventry's game against Queen's Park Rangers on last Friday. I was very impressed, especially with them in the second half. They're playing away to Barnsley. They're quite a big price away to Barnsley, 12-5 to win the game. You're looking at that QPR game. It takes a little bit of time for a newly promoted team to adjust a high level. But second half, after Mark Robbins had a word with them, some of their football and their intensity was excellent. Callum O'Hare, they got picked up from Aston Villa, was superb, got a great goal. The right wing back, right, you know, great service as well. Just think they look, even though their budget apparently is one of the lowest in the Championship, I think they'll be absolutely fine. and be, you know, well away from relegation. I'm not so sure about Barnsley. They play with a lot of intensity and a high press, but as you can see at Chelsea in the week, it gets them into a lot of trouble. I mean, a lot of, I think four of Chelsea's six goals were by nicking the ball off of Barnsley high up the pitch. It's a short turnaround as well for Barnsley. They've already had two defeats without scoring, lost 1-0 at home to Luton, 2-0 away to Reading when, I mean, that was a bit distorted because they had lost two players to red cards. But there's not a great deal of evidence that Barnsley are a lot better than the team which narrowly stayed up last season. Coventry, to me, look like they'll be OK. So take a chance on them. The second one, I'm going to go League One. Doncaster, shade of odds on at home to Bristol Rovers, which I think is a really good bet. Doncaster, I think, are going to be challenging for promotion this season. Excellent 3-1 win at Charlton last weekend. Great goals from Maja Gomez and Tyrese John-Jules, who I think is on loan from Arsenal. They're going to go well. Bristol Rovers have been poor for a while. Two wins in the last 18 league games. Brushed aside 2-0 in the loss at home to Ipswich last weekend. They've lost their main goal threat when Johnson Clark Harris moved to Peterborough this summer. So Doncaster to win that one as well.
Some darts at Coventry and Doncaster for Dan this week. Mark, what about you?
In terms of what's not my nap, it's probably just one really in the EFL, and that's Blackpool draw no bet at Gillingham. If you have a look at Blackpool's sort of performances, I think they've done very well so far. They took Stoke to penalties in the League Cup when that game took place before the league had started. They were the better team at Plymouth, it looked like, anyway, on the stats, even though they lost that match, well, 1-0. And then they've comfortably beaten Swindon 2-0, again, dominating on the stats. So if you look at Gillingham from the other side of that, they've had a few injuries already. Steve Evans, I know he moans quite often, but he was moaning again this time about being down to the bare bones the other week. They did beat Wigan, but, you know, I think we'll have to probably look back at the end of the season and think that this is a good time to be playing Wigan when the team's completely disrupted. So you couldn't read too much into that. They even struggled to see off Southend in the EFL Cup, and teams, you know, even teams in League Two are thrashing them. So I'd have a question mark against Gillingham, and I think Blackpool could have a really strong season. So a team I'm against playing one that I really like. So always a positive when that happens.
Yeah, the perfect combination. And we'll save your nap for now. We'll get onto that in a moment. But any other fancies across any other divisions?
Yeah, I do really fancy Atalanta against Lazio. Now, that's not this weekend, but the Wednesday fixture. They're going off price if you can get. I back them at 15-8, but I back them at any price over 6-4. You can get 17-10 general there. I just think they were easily one of the 10 best sides in the world last year. They've kept most of the squad together and made some great additions. They've still not played a competitive fixture, so I think a lot of the shrewd money hasn't come in for them yet, but they're still a very strong team. They'll be challenging for the league. To see them not being favourites against Lazio is just mind-boggling. Yeah, apart from that, probably just a bit of a bad each way on the goal scorers in the Spurs match tonight. Spurs are going to be 12 on to win it, so there's some good value to be had on first goal scorer with certain bookies.
Brilliant, and that's the perfect link. Let's get the chaps' naps for this week.
This will not be beaten.
Okay, as always, we'll get a nap from each of our panellists and put them together as an enhanced treble on the Paddy Power website. You can find it over there, and we'll also link it in the description of this podcast. And Will, we'll start with you on your debut. What is your nap, your best bet of the week?
Like I said, I'm surprised to see them not being favs, even though they're away at Sheffield United. I really do fancy Leeds, and they're going to be my nap at 13-8. Stick that in the treble for me, please.
Mark?
I'm going to Italy. Big game of the weekend in Italy. It's Roma against Juventus. Andrea Pirlo got off to the perfect start and with a 3-0 victory over Sampdoria. And I think they can continue that against the Roma team that were actually, they got a 0-0 draw at Verona, but then had the point taken off them. And it was given as a 3-0 Verona win because Roma fielded an ineligible player. Dzeko didn't start that game for Roma. There was talk of he was leaving and maybe going to Juventus, but they used Mkhitaryan as a false nine. Maybe explains why they scored 0 in that game. They haven't brought Chris Smalling back either. So problems in both boxes for Roma and Juventus. This would be a tricky game, I think, if the crowd was in. But the Stadio Olimpico that's not full can, I think, be a much easier place to travel to. And I just expect Juventus' quality to come through in the end.
And Dan, completely treble.
Yeah, you've heard this before from Mark. I'm going to go for Blackpool to win at Gillingham. I'll just go for the straight win for Blackpool. I think Blackpool have done some great business this summer, especially with attacking players. Brought in CJ Hamilton from Mansfield. Jerry Yates is coming from Rotherham. Keshi Anderson from Swindon. They've got an exciting attack. As Mark mentioned, created some good chances at Plymouth. Didn't get the result. Then they got a good result, 2-0 at home to Swindon. They're going to be up and around the playoffs this season. Gillingham, I think, could struggle. They lost 2-0 at home to Hull in the first game of the season. Midweek, they lost 1-0 away to Stoke. Only had 3 shots in that game in the EFL Cup. And I agree, you can really overlook that 3-2 win at Wigan, whose team's been absolutely decimated at the moment. So I think they'll struggle. I think Blackpool will be winners in Kent this weekend.
So if you fancy a little bit on that, it's Leeds, Juventus and Blackpool. That will be enhanced on the Paddy Power website. Thanks to Mark, thanks to Dan, and thanks to Will for their insight and knowledge on this week's football podcast. We'll be back again next week. If you are having a bet this weekend, please do remember to gamble responsibly. And we'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.